Welcome to episode 24 of Techish. This is Abba Desi, founder of Hustle Crew and Non-Tech Tech, joined by my co-host
Michael Bahane, co-founder of peopleofcolorintech.com. And we back.
It's been a busy week in the tech world, but I feel like first I want to shout out all the listeners who got involved with last week's episode.
And none of you agreed with me.
There was some contentious debate around the latest Nike campaign featuring the
Kaepernick. And kneeling and flag and sponsorship and people burning shoes. That's the short recap.
That is the short recap. Listen to the last episode
if you want the details.
I just wanted to mention it because, you know, a lot of people agreed with me in that debate. But more importantly, I was just grateful to see how many people are actually engaging with the hashtag Techish.
People then.
Sharing their views. And we'd love to see more of that.
Yeah, and actually, we got one person on SoundCloud who agreed with me. I thought I would just say that. So,
okay, great.
And actually, also, it has been a follow-on. So, and this is against me.
Wow.
So, the founder of Nike, Phil Knight, he recently donated to like a Republican candidate. So people were like, oh my God, Nike's profits are soaring and you guys are all shouting it out. And then he just donated to like a Republican candidate. Which is not helping me because I wasn't defending Nike. I thought I was just basically saying I commend them for doing that. I wasn't saying that all of a sudden they're our best friend and, you know, they're down for the cause. I just thought that one action was decent.
Yeah.
But of course, yeah, they're a soulless corporation. And if you're an owner of a company that size, you want a tax cut. So you're going to give to a Republican.
Yeah, that is a very interesting development in the debate, in the story. But yeah, shout out everyone that got involved. Gosh, what news story are we going to start with first?
I think we got to do with the iPhone, haven't we?
Oh my gosh,
the iPhones.
So it was really funny because every time the Apple conventions happen, iPhone announcements happen, my Twitter's just taken over by people who are like watching, commenting, and everything. And what was really interesting about this announcement is that loads of people were commenting on how unexciting and uneventful it was.
Yeah, it was dead. I didn't watch it, but I know it was dead. I never watch it, actually. I think the last eventful time was when, what's her name, Bose?
Bozoma St. John,
yeah. There we go. Like, that was the last time I was like, okay, something interesting. Like, you know, you got a black woman out there on the stage killing it. But beyond that, every year I'm like, it's boring. Especially since Steve Jobs died.
This is gone.
Yeah, I mean,
energy.
And also in terms of like...
He did carpool karaoke.
Did he?
Tim Cook.
Does
not
he have
Steve
any
Jobs.
Charisma, though? that would be a whole different show. get the bar
salt. Hologram!
Get some salt out. Anyways, I digress. So there was a whole bunch of new phones that were released, and I'm not necessarily sure like what they're doing. So they got the new iPhone X, which is the XS, which is replacing the iPhone X.
Yes.
Then they've got the iPhone XS.
By the way, you can also pronounce it tennis, like the sport.
So
just in case you wanted to know.
And then there's the a plus version of that.
Yes.
And then there's the XR.
Yeah.
Which is basically like their cheap their low end version of the iPhone.
Like what they did with the SE when that came out.
Yeah, and then now also one thing that people are crying about is that they've discontinued all of the old iPhone headphone jacks. So you have to buy their proprietary thing. And that is actually one of the best selling iPhone products or Apple products
from
Best Buy. Not the AirPods, the jack.
Oh wow.
It's proprietary. you can't buy any other companies like
come on China, help us out.
China, get working.
Like, no, but
that's what I'm saying. Post Steve Jobs, I feel like now they're just trying to milk everything. And it's not necessarily about innovation. I mean, I'm sure there are some innovative new features for the Apple Watch I heard and whatever, but it feels like they're just milking it now and trying to get every bit of profit that they can.
I mean, look, I could hate on them, but it doesn't take away from the fact that I am locked into their ecosystem.
Yeah.
I love my MacBook. I love my iPhone.
You love it. Are you a prisoner or are you basically like willing?
I love it. AirDrop's great. iPhones are great. I have had Android phones in the past.
I feel like you're in the payroll.
Granted.
No. I feel like you're
Wait for it. One thing I did want to say on that is like, you know, I always say this. It's not necessarily about like criticizing the company, but rather like criticizing the system. Like it's not their fault that they're like one of the most highly valued stocks on the stock market and they have a pressure to continue rising and growing the value of that stock. And one way that they can do it is lock us into a system where we have to purchase their proprietary technology. I mean, I remember when my laptop charger died and I was like, oh, let me just go buy another
laptop
charger. 65
I paid 70 for mine.
Ooh.
Yeah. My girlfriend was not pleased. She was like, what?
I know. Like, you can buy a flight to an exotic destination for that amount from London.
I don't know about exotic. Maybe like Mallorca or something. Hey, man, like
Lisbon. Lisbon. I'll go.
Shout out to EasyJet.
But yeah. Well, what do you think about this? So I do not own an Apple Watch. I'm very proud of the fact that my Casio watch retails for $6.99 on Amazon. However,
we are both so hipster because I have a Casio watch. And mine's like $5.99.
Shout out. But everyone else in tech, we're just cheap.
Yeah.
But everyone else in tech and in the world in general, all over London, I see people in Apple Watches. Obviously, all over SF, everyone's got their Apple Watch. Mm. Some people are saying that all the innovation that used to come from the iPhone is being channeled into the Apple Watch.
I mean, pardon the pun, I don't have time for it. I was holding on to that one for a minute still. As soon as you brought it up, I was like, I'm going to say
for
this.
A
yeah. Double pun. Yeah, no. Apparently, actually, it's now like FDA approved like healthcare device because it can even detect now like heart murmurs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this is some next level shit.
Okay,
so. Don't quote me on that, but I read that on Twitter. So on, like,
let's
scrolling.
Do a poll when we release this episode. Are you more excited about the new iPhone or the new Apple Watch? Or even just jump into the debate?
I don't think anybody's excited about the Apple Watch.
About you?
Yeah,
really?
I don't think. You know what? Because I think.
Some people love their Apple Watches.
I'm getting old now, but I try to keep tabs of the culture. I want to say the culture, I mean, you know, what are the.
Culture
the,
with
the,
a K?
Culture with a K. Yeah, whatever. Cardi B's child. She might beat me up because she's just talking about her child. That's a whole other story. Anyways, yeah, so like. I don't see anybody like trendy with the Apple Watch. I feel like
really?
It's a lot of early like tech geek adopters that have it. Like,
I disagree.
No, come on. Like, have you?
I've seen some cool people. I saw someone with like an Apple Watch that had like a custom strap. It was like rose gold.
Cool. All right, let's do that in the poll actually as well.
Okay.
Then. We'll throw that out there.
If you've
seen anybody cool wear an Apple Watch.
Okay. Big news story that broke this week was Atrium raising $65 million from A16Z. I guess this is just huge because it was only June last year when they did their first round of funding. Mm. It's very rare for a company so young to grow so bigly. Mm. Bigly?
New words. We haven't sound like Trump.
So the founder, Justin Kam, has already had a very famous exit with Twitch.
Was like a $1 billion exit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's 35 years old.
Yeah, make me feel bad.
It's also interesting because there have been quite a few people disrupting the legal space and disrupting law. And ultimately, Atrium is making it easier for startups to just go through all of the legal processes. The reason I wanted to mention it, not only because it's just such an incredible achievement, is because it does make me think about jobs that will be replaced by AI.
Mm.
You can't really operate in the tech industry without having this debate every now and then. And a lot of people say that law, ironically, because lawyers are paid so much right now, might be one of the first industries that could go fully automated. What do you think about that?
I would agree. I think, yeah, they may be the first victims.
AI lawyer? Would you have one for people of color in tech?
Yeah, why not?
Nice.
Let's go.
Sign me up.
No, I think, I always do this. My friend cusses me because I'm always like, I'm reading this book. I've been reading the new Yuval Noah Harari, our favorite author. Yeah, 21 Lessons of 21st Century, something like that.
I thought you were going to be like 21 Questions.
No, 50 cents. So this one, anyway, this book is like, yeah, automation is coming. Everybody's going to get taken out eventually. And what's different this time about the previous automation is that it's going to be a lot of middle class, like white collar jobs. So like lawyers, accountants, they're going to be the first to go. But then he says that there might be a stage where it actually creates more jobs. So it takes more people now to man an unmanned drone. So like data analysts, you know, people on the ground, the pilots. Whereas you would have assumed that it would be the reverse effect, right? So at the moment, this startup, from when I read up on it, was basically saying we free up lawyers' time. They don't have to do any more of the nitty-gritty Excel spreadsheet. It basically helps them.
Tedious
that,
admin
the tedious
kind of
admin
stuff?
Right. So in this first version, that's being helpful to the lawyers. But I reckon if we talk to the founder and we got him a few drinks and said to him, what's the final vision? They would say, no more lawyers.
Nice.
Just like Travis Kalanick, yeah, famously on stage, he admitted that the problem are the drivers. That was a famous quote of his. And he was basically saying, listen, in their boardroom, they're like, we can't wait until there's no drivers because then we ain't got to pay nobody.
Yeah.
So watch your space. I mean, the book that I mentioned, it's meant to prepare you for the future for the next 20, 30 years. Like, what do you tell your kids?
Yeah.
And you can't tell your kids, be a lawyer, it's a safe job anymore. I don't think you can. I don't know what industry you could say. I'm a software engineer currently, and maybe the AI will be able to code better than me.
It's all about the transferable skills.
Which are? like, I don't know.
Which are communication, analytics, critical thinking.
That's what he says. He said, basically, the major skill that you need is the ability to withstand change and not to be too stressed out.
Adaptability, agility, flexibility.
At 45, you may find yourself, your whole career is now defunct and you've got to start again from scratch, which is a completely alien concept because most people, it's education, then 30, 40 years making money.
Yeah.
Now, or potentially in the future, every 10 years, you're going to have to reinvent yourself. So, interesting. And
stay on your toes.
Yeah. And also, you know, the point we made about, you know, raising money, like, it's amazing how difficult it is to raise money. But once you have the track record, that money just rains on you. Yeah. That money just rains on you. Like, once you've had
a billion, cash magnet,
$65 million after 1 year, like, as a startup, unheard of. I don't know. Don't quote me on that, but it feels like it's unheard of.
Well, like within first year of operations.
Crazy, right?
It doesn't really happen like that anymore. I mean, especially not in the last few years. I think you make a really good point there about how, you know, once you have that record, people want to invest in you. I feel like there should maybe be more visibility about like how to get a company like ready for acquisition. If that's such an important goal for many people, there could definitely be more like literature about that. You know, what do companies look for when they're looking for acquisitions?
That's true.
That's something that I'm very interested in.
Chance of Hustle Crew. I'll buy it.
All right, let's talk. Let's take it offline. Right, next story.
Okay, cool. So a quick shout out to Alan Hamilton for being on the cover of Fast Company magazine. I feel like there's not an episode that goes by we don't mention her. She's not a sponsor yet. Anyways, but no, shout out to her. It's amazing. I mean, I saw on a lot of the tweets. I mean, literally, it's like 3 years ago from nowhere.
And has there even been like a woman on Fast Company recently, or like a black woman or a black person?
She said
on
that
Fast Company?
She was the first black woman to be on there that wasn't an entertainer. She wasn't like they had Oprah. Is her name Lena White from Master of None, and Serena? But she's the first like just business.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that's not a small feat.
See, that's another company jumping on the bandwagon, though.
How you mean?
I mean, obviously, it's great for her, but like, come on, Fast Company, where you been?
Real talk. Yeah, man, Arlen, man, what are your secrets, man? 3 years from nowhere, and now she's on the cover of that magazine.
What's that life juice?
Actually, let me talk to you because you were on you had a little media profile thing this week.
Did I?
Oh, yeah, like, so.
Oh, yeah, my Forbes piece.
No, it wasn't
I'm
that.
Joking.
I was supposed to be like, huh? I was like, you're hiding the stuff from me.
Time Magazine, you didn't see my cover.
Time Magazine, person of the year.
Me and Trump, it's a double cover.
Go on, shout out, then. Don't be shy now.
Yeah, so thanks to the lovely people at Courier, who featured me in the very first edition of their new paper for London. Courier Magazine, if you don't know it, is a business journal that comes out every month. Think of it as like, you know, wallpaper meets The Economist meets Bloomberg Businessweek kind of vibe.
Yeah.
So it's great for just giving you like a macro view of like different, like, I guess, scenes like across the startup space. They tend to sort of theme like the issues, like pick a few different verticals to focus on, which is awesome. Mm. Do really deep profiles. I did an amazing profile on made.com recently. And yeah, they approached me for two things, really. They're doing a live event towards the end of this month. So that's sick. Like their first offline event. And I'm going to be hosting a panel around the power of hustle, you know, that play on words and like what hustle actually means and how we do it, which will feature Anissa Britton, founder of 23 Code Street.
Oh, wow.
And Emma Gannon, broadcaster and author of recent book, Control Alt Delete. Yeah, exactly. And also her latest book, The Multi-Hyphen Method. So I'm really excited about that. And I was featured in their free paper that's all over London right now. They just did a little write-up on me.
How does it work, though? Do you get to see the copy before it goes live, or are you just, like, surprised?
That was, like, blind faith. So this is my first real experience of like mainstream press.
Yeah.
And what happened was, you know, John Sunyer, who's the journalist, he's worked at the Financial Times for years, effectively sat me down, recorded it, just kind of had a conversation with me, asked me questions. We did the photo shoot later. And I think what he was trying to do was just like get a sense of who I was. I mean, he asked me a range of different things and then he finally came up with that write-up. So you do put a lot of faith into the editorial team and into the journalists. And I mean, I guess as you get more famous or like become a company, you can like insist on things being checked before. But I kind of just went into it blindly. I mean, Amy Levin, who's another editor of Courier and moving on to do an exciting new project now, I know her through YSYS. I have a lot of trust in her, and that was a cool opportunity for me. So yeah,
if you
haven't seen it yet, check it out. Wow, so one story that has been dominating my social feeds this week has been Serena Williams and the final of the US Open.
Mm.
I don't want to focus too much on that. I feel like a lot has been said already. But I think what would be really interesting to focus on is the caricature that came out the other day. Mm. I think it's an Australian
newspaper, I think.
Yeah, a newspaper.
Quite right-leaning newspaper.
Really just jumping on the angry black woman trope, the kind of animalistic black person trope.
Yeah.
You know, the N-word trope, really. And received a lot of backlash. He was quite unashamed in how he did it. And what was also really interesting was the number of high-profile people that completely ignored the cartoon's connection to damaging stereotypes and the history.
Yeah.
You know, of, like, black caricature. Like, someone, like, it was, like, John Cleese that was like, but cartoons are supposed to be offensive. And I was like, dude, just... Nah, no one asked. Nobody's no one asked that. For Monty Python to give social fallback. Justice commentary.
Yeah, fallback.
What are your thoughts on the aftermath?
I think you kind of said it all, really, to be honest. Like,
Do you think... Because, look, this links back to this freedom of speech debate, which we have on the show time and time again.
Yeah.
Should there be freedom of expression when it comes to caricatures?
I don't think it's a free speech issue because I think they have the right to publish what they want, and we have the right to say what we want back, so they shouldn't complain that if we don't like their speech with our speech, if that makes any sense.
But do you think
so they're like, oh, free speech, like we have the right, yeah, you have the right to do that, and we have the right to be like, yo, that's dead, that's racist, and if we want to boycott you and get advertisers to boycott you in response, that's also our speech. The argument of free speech to me is if the government is censoring you,
I guess
the legal principle of free speech, that the government can't say you can't do this. And you know, I'm aware of, and I know people from countries where the government doesn't allow like private press. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And this is not that. They can say what they want and we can respond in time. The people that have defended the caricature, I don't know if it's just out and out historical ignorance or whether there's something more insidious in the sense that they don't consider those concerns to be valid. And what I mean by that is, and this might get me in a bit of hot water, but you know, we're all aware of there are certain racial tropes that you just can't make about other racial groups, if that makes any sense to you.
Yes.
Yeah. And I respect that completely. But why in this instance it seems to be okay and people want to ignore the fact that black people have historically been portrayed in animalistic ways, subhuman, and the angry black woman trope. I don't know why, to be brutally honest, why that's seen as fair game. How anybody could defend that. I mean, I saw a few interviews where there was a few high-profile black British people on BBC trying to make that point, and it was almost falling on deaf ears.
Make the point of?
As in explaining to them, having to explain why that's offensive.
I think
they were ignorant to it. To me, I'm flummoxed.
I think what people sometimes forget is that tropes and stereotypes kill people, right? Yeah. It's very difficult to make the connection between, like, oh, come on, it's just a joke, it's just fun, and police brutality. Yeah. And, like, the overwhelming number of deaths that have happened within police custody for people who are black.
Yeah.
You know, people who are shot because they are black.
Yeah.
People who are incarcerated with no trial because they are black. So I think what happens is that disconnect behind, oh, you know, what's so bad about calling someone an angry black woman if they are bad? And it's like, well, the reality is, you know, decades of reinforcing that has created an inextricable thought in people's minds that is basically true.
Yeah.
We're brainwashing people, basically. Like, what we don't realize is we are brainwashing people if we don't challenge those things. And that brainwashing creates very harmful and sometimes violent actions that cause people to die.
And even the actual illustrator was like, well, I'm not racist. And maybe I don't know what's in the guy's heart. Perhaps he isn't. But at the same time, sometimes you can be subconsciously, you know, manifesting racial tropes and not realizing the origin of it, or why you even make that connection between Serena Williams and an animal, like, or why you're drawing her in that manner.
Yeah.
You know, would he draw Maria Sharapova in that manner if she behaved in the exact same way? If he can honestly look me in the eye and say yes, then okay, cool. But I sincerely doubt that.
His challenge was that, oh, look at this cartoon I did of Djokovic the other day. Like, you know, it's not flattering either. And that's what I mean. He missed the point.
Yeah.
He missed the point. And I think, you know, it is important to remember that racism is complex. Sexism is complex. There are people who, you know, don't feel like they are racist, but are still, like, participating in either promoting white supremacy or, like, oppressing other people just because they're failing to educate themselves about an issue or, like, failing to acknowledge the role that they play in keeping that problem going. So Yeah, I think it's just important for all of us, like you said, to remember that we have a voice and a right to critique what we don't agree with.
Yeah, shout out. So, Uber redesign, yay or nay?
Whew, I was just so underwhelmed. Does that make me lame? I'm a nay
as well.
It's unnecessary.
As in, this is going to sound really...
They probably spent millions on it as well.
Oh, yeah. And I think they've got some really highfalutin design agency. I can't remember. I think Wolfson or something. Yeah, it's some really highfalutin design agency. Yeah,
what word is highfalutin? That's not a word.
That is a real word.
Is it?
Of course.
Hyper.
We'll double check after the show. I may be wrong.
How do you spell it? What
does
it mean?
I'm not going to go into that. Anyways.
Anyway, Uber rebrand.
So the Uber rebrand, I didn't look at the... I don't know how different the product is, but I looked at like the design pitch that the agency released.
Yes.
And I looked at the logo, I was like, I hate the font. As in, I do some front-end development work. So like, and I'm not a designer by per se, but like I have a sense of like sensibility.
Aesthetics.
Aesthetics, right? And I'm like, I hate the logo. And I couldn't get beyond that. I just hate the font. And the whole product has this font. And I just like, I can't see beyond that. So maybe call me being like overly analytical, but that was it. So
it's
that's
all
what
about
I, that's,
the, yeah.
The instinct was like, I was like, no.
You don't like the font. It's so interesting, isn't it? Like we have this relationship with like typefaces and like typography and fonts. Like love, hate relationships. Comic Sans is like a frequently mentioned font when it comes to things like this. People always talk about Airbnb in a positive way, being like, oh, I love the Airbnb font. Mm. I definitely feel that like tech world and like startup world is dominated by like serif fonts.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like people always love that like simple, clean style. And I feel like what Uber have tried to do here is like, hey, you know, we're gearing up for our IPO. Let's get down and hit with the kids and let's hope that no one remembers all those shady things that happened and all the drivers that committed suicide in India and all the groping that happened in our HQ. Look, we've got a cool new font. And in fairness to them, the old font I always felt was a bit corporate.
Okay.
Because, like, Lyft was always young and hip. Pink, fun. And
amazing,
Uber
though?
Always felt a bit corporate. And now they've come and they've been like, oh, look, our font is a bit like Lyft's now. And it's all, like, young and, like, dynamic. But they still stuck to black, which was interesting.
Yeah, I think they can't do pink. That's
for
damn sure.
Like, you can't. What, literally just be Lyft.
Yeah. But, you know, actually, they've had a bit of trouble with their logos. Because remember when the app icon was the U, and then they changed it into this really like abstract thingy.
Oh,
do you remember?
Yeah.
And everyone was like, what the hell is this? And I remember like Travis, I keep mispronouncing his surname, but Travis, the former CEO, he was literally at like a conference and he was like having to explain it for ages. And the guy was, the host was like, but why?
Just
like,
kill it, just
yeah,
kill it.
The guy was just like, oh, you know, because it was meant to represent like roads and travel and all kinds
future, drones,
So
autonomous car vehicles.
They've had a bit of problems in this area. They've had a few problems.
Do you know what, though? They're still going to do well in that IPO, aren't they?
Of course. Of course.
We're just, like, throwing shade, and then we're like, yo, buy us in, yo.
No, I'm like, the designer doesn't seem great to me, but in terms of, like, as a company, like, yeah, I think there is a lot of appetite for them to go public.
Mm. Do you know what? What do you think is the benefit of investing in a rebrand? Like, to what extent is it just, like, a strategic move? Almost like more like a publicity exercise than an actual, oh, look, here's the brand, you know? Like from your perspective as a CEO, like under what circumstances would you rebrand? No, but you have a revenue generating business. Under what circumstances would you be forced to do that kind of thing?
I don't know. I almost feel like a rebrand is when you've got too much time on your hands and you've got so much money that you can just be like, okay, let's just do this. I mean, I can't even imagine what it's like at that level. I'm sure they have focus groups that come in and say, well, the brand is being perceived this way.
Mm.
So how about we get a more softer touch and spend
100
million or 10 million.
Psychology.
And let's just outsource it to some top, you know, fancy design agency where nobody wears socks.
Yeah. What's wrong with barefoot? I remember,
I
feel you.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's like... So there probably are like really like corporate reasons, but I feel like it isn't. Yeah, it's not a necessity.
What I think is interesting is like I feel like I have to compare this to the last big consumer tech brand that did a highly publicized rebrand in my memory, which was Airbnb a few years ago.
Yeah.
So they reinvented their logo, and what I loved about that was that it also came with this message and story around belonging. Because that was around the time some stories were breaking about hosts, you know, not welcoming LGBTQI guests and all this kind of stuff. So there was a bit of negative publicity.
It's still popular about that, actually, especially with black guests.
Yeah, and black guests. So there was a lot of stories around, you know, the discrimination that was happening within the Airbnb community. And what was so cool about their rebranding was that, you know, we've got this new logo, we've got this new vision, but with that comes this new focus on belonging, belonging, belonging. So it came with that story. So I feel like with Uber, I want to see the story that comes with this for me to like buy into it more and be more excited about
it. So you've answered your own question. The Airbnb rebrand was prompted by a negative image that was out there. Mm. So they had to try to like, you know, change the narrative, claim the higher ground and spin the story in a different way. So that's probably why Uber's done it.
Okay, that's
I don't see, when I looked at the design spec, I didn't see that. I didn't see that this is a now softer Uber. I mean, maybe the font perhaps is meant to be softer, but I just saw ugliness. So, Uber, if you still want to sponsor us, give us a shout.
I think we need to like wait for this rebrand to unfold. Like, it starts with the aesthetic, and then it comes with all the messaging that comes with it. So the jury's still out for me. I prefer the font than the old one. It feels less corporate, but obviously I want to hear from you guys and girls and everyone in between,
we'll do a poll,
all the listeners. Yeah, that could be another poll. Yeah, all our poll ideas. Yeah, we're winning. What do you guys think of the rebrand? Do you like it? And yeah, if anyone within the company has some advice to share, that would be great too. Like, what was the driver behind doing this?
Cool. Next topic.
I just wanted to take a moment to RIP one of my favorite apps. I love the mobile app. I love the web app, and that is Inbox by Gmail.
Did you use it?
Shutting it down. I have been its number one fan since it came out.
Seriously?
You know when Google's like, hey, do you want to try this new thing? And you're always like, ignore, keep me on the old Gmail. I was like, oh, this is good. The thing about Inbox is all of the things that I loved about it, AI-powered features like predictive responses, snoozing messages.
Do you use them?
Replying. I use them a lot, but everyone else has done them now. And they've brought all those features into Gmail. So it just doesn't make sense to have two competing projects. I get where Google's coming from like the CEO's strategic perspective. But as a consumer, I've always preferred the UI of Inbox and still do prefer it to new Gmail. But, you know, gotta suck it up and move on.
Basically, Abbas bullied me into talking about the story, the whole Cardi B and Nicki Minaj scuffing or fighting.
I think the kerfuffle
at some fashion gala. I don't know what's the intellectual spin I can give on the story, but it was just crazy, man. So
physical fight. Come on, talk me through this. I haven't followed the story.
You know what? You're using your time correctly. I don't know why I'm even. I need to unfollow the Shade Room. So anyways, and the academics. So anyways, Cardi was under the impression that Nicki Minaj had liked a few tweets that were derogatory against her child or her parenting skills. And there's always been a bit of underlying tension between the two of them because unfortunately, you know, there could only be one queen of rap apparently. And that might be, you might understand this better than me, the way women are kind of forced to compete in these ways.
Patriarchy.
So there's always been a bit of underlying tension, but it's never gone this far. And then the whole liking of tweets regarding her child is what sent Cardi over the edge. So when they ran into each other at this fashion gala event, Cardi had tried to step to her and said, you know, what now kind of thing.
Wow.
And obviously there's a lot of security between the two of them. And unfortunately, Cardi got bit hurt. She walked out with a little lump on the side of her face because she tried to reach. And obviously when you're as rich as Nicki, your security is, you know, is A1. She didn't get near her. She threw a shoe at her.
Old school.
Yeah, she tried to do that thing.
Be careful what tweets you like. You like a tweet
now,
and then...
Apparently that was actually faked, supposedly. Yes.
Someone hacked Nicki Minaj's phone.
No, as in like it was a Photoshop and someone showed it to her and was like, oh, of a screenshot.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. This is real like...
That we're going next layer.
Like, yeah, so I don't know. What do you think? Like,
Do you count tweets as endorsements? Like, if you like a tweet?
Of course.
No, but sometimes I like controversial things.
Of course.
Just so I remember them.
It's almost like, oh, you know, Michael, like...
He sucks.
And
I liked
a
tweet like that the other day, man. I'm joking.
I was like, who?
No.
Anyways, yeah.
You're about to throw your shoe at me, weren't you?
Yeah, basically. No violence, of course. But anyways, I think I found the intellectual spin on this. Like,
go.
So, and I touched upon it a second ago. Do you find yourself being pressurized to compete with other women in your industry or field when you might feel like actually there's space for all of us, and why are we being forced to be like the only one?
The tokenism.
Yeah, not tokenism, but like, as in you're kind of being like, I'm being made to feel as if there's only space for one of us here, but I've got to be on top.
That idea of scarcity of position for specific groups, often the minority groups, comes from the reality of tokenism, from the idea that people are only included to like tick a box or to make people look good. And that is like 100% symptomatic of patriarchy, right? Because that's actually a practice that has been in place. So earlier this month, and I think I mentioned in a previous podcast, the government released the research they had done here in the UK about why there were so few women on boards.
Okay, cool.
And the responses from that were like ridiculous. Like one CEO said, but we already have one. Like verbatim.
Like it's a pet. Like, yeah. We've got one.
Another CEO was like, all the good ones are taken. Jeez. And, you know, in patriarchy, we still have this idea that, like, women are inferior to men, unfortunately. Mm. And I think as a result of that and the reality of seeing that playing out, women being paid less, fewer women CEOs, there are more CEOs named John in Fortune 500 companies than there are women who are CEOs.
Shout out to John, boy.
I might change my name to John, actually.
Yeah, why not? This whole podcast would be called John. John-ish.
John, I guess. But yeah, I think I do not feel that personally, because by the nature of the work that I do, I believe in a better world and one that is getting better. But I understand why people feel that. And if you do feel that, you are justified in feeling that, because there are still companies that are only hiring women or promoting women, probably to tick a box. Certainly the ones that were in that government survey.
Mm. So to push you more on it, do you find that that belief becomes internalized amongst the other women? I think that's what I was trying to get, because this situation, you had two women that came to physical blows, both of them multimillionaires, both of them highly successful, and yet somehow there's this perception that is pushed by the media that they can only be one. Like, so do you see that similar things in or no?
No. I think generally the attitude is changing. I mean, in reality, that fight could have been choreographed. I mean, celebrities are the best at manipulating the media.
That bruise that she had looked pretty real.
Publicity stunts. And also, like, are they fighting because they want to dominate, or are they fighting because someone like actually dissed someone's recently newborn child? I mean, you know, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, right? Yeah. So that could just be like legit and whatever, understandable hate. But yeah, no, I don't think so. I think it's more complex than that, and I think it's changing.
Maybe we need to come up with a section like recommendations. I don't know. But anyways, the podcast that I want to recommend is one called Akimbo. It's by Seth Godin. I'm a longtime fan of Seth Godin, actually. He's like marketing guru, and he had a blog. Well, he still has a blog, and he would write one blog post a day and whatever. I recommend everybody check it out, because it's just a podcast with him by himself, and he kind of does like short 15-minute snippets, basically, and giving advice and whatnot. And in the recent episode that I listened to, he's basically talking about, so often we find ourselves working to please algorithms, in the sense that, you know, you're trying to juice your SEO, or you're trying to make sure that the Instagram algorithm makes sure that you're at the top. So he talks about, just make something that you know that somebody would want to share with their friend, and that is it. Would I, you know, show this to somebody else? Would it delight somebody and say, oh, you know, you check this out? And if you're doing work that is like that, then be happy, and eventually you will get your just rewards. Don't, you know, think, oh yeah, we need 20,000 followers, or this and that, we're not doing good enough, how can we use a bot to juice up our followers? Like, and I know it's easier said than done, but I'm trying to be more cognizant of that, because it's very easy as when you're running your company to get caught in that kind of thinking. And that was quite kind of a welcome podcast. So check it out. Akimbo is called. So that wraps up episode 24. Use the hashtag techish. You guys have been really awesome doing that.
Don't forget that you can see us in real life.
You can see us in real life
at the North Star Conference.
It's coming real close, October. And we also have a Patreon if you want to support us. Techishpod@gmail.com if you want to email us your questions. And
if you enjoyed listening to this episode, why not share it with a friend?
Share it with a friend, just like Seth Godin said. And rate, review, subscribe, all of that good stuff. You know the deal. And we'll catch you again next week.
Bye.
Ciao.